I was just thinking about the right adjective to describe the result of the Derby at Epsom, the 241st Derby. Sorry, hello, Cornelius here, Cornelius Lysett on the Cornelius cast. Yeah, I was just thinking about the right adjective. I don't really agree with words like bizarre or weird that I've heard bandied around. Unexpected, maybe. 25-1 shot Serpentine leading all the way, beating 50-1 shot Khalifa Sat, and 66-1 Oran Naveen, with the favourite Cameco fourth and the rest not really getting into it. On the day, surreal was how the winning rider, Emmett McNamara, described his success, his first ride in the Derby and his first win indeed since October. And he's been good enough to join us on the Cornelius cast now. So is surreal still the right word, Emmett?
Yeah, I think so, Cornelius. Thanks a million for having me on. Really appreciate it. Yeah, it was the first kind of word that came to mind, and I don't think anything has changed in the interim since, really. Yeah, it still has that feel to it of, you know, a surrealness, the quietness of the stand, the quietness of the infield, the quietness of not having any horses around you during the race or even close to the line. It was only literally when I'd gone a few yards past and I'd pulled up that Oisin Murphy was the first one that arrived beside me, and then soon a couple of guys that arrived on afterwards, and I kind of gave a little bit of a yup out of me then, all right, but it was only at that point that I suppose I started to get realise what was after happening.
You were talking about sound and what you could hear. So what as you're coming round Tatton Corner and up the famous straight at Epsom, what could you hear? What were you hearing? Just the wind whisking past your head?
Just the wind in your ears and the horses breathing underneath you. And the odd kind of small crack off your own whip, I suppose, and that kind of thing. So it was kind of a deathly silence, really, was the answer. But it didn't take away from the occasion for me, really, to be honest with you. You know, I was still well aware when I passed that winning line on my left just how important that winning post was that I was after going by.
Yeah, the most important winning post in racing, they say. That it's just a bit of wood, but it's the Derby, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the most important piece of wood of them all now. It's been passed by some fantastic stallions, jockeys, trainers, and carrying the silks of some of the world's biggest owners over the years. So I'm well aware of the prestige surrounding the race and delighted to be a small part of the history of it now.
When I contacted you to say, would you come on today, you said, I'm not sure I believe it yet, a day or two later, but I'm not sure I believe it yet.
Yeah, it's definitely starting to sink in now. I know definitely at the time I wasn't possibly aware, I suppose, maybe just how big it was as regards, you know, maybe a whole pile of people hadn't seen it at all. I wasn't, you know, I was thinking maybe it's not that big a deal, but it's only when you come in and you start to see all the messages coming through, when you see the kind of press attention that it's been getting, and you see the viewership figures for ITV and that kind of thing, that kind of, I suppose, the magnitude of it starts to hit you a small bit. But at the same time, on the day, it was kind of just another race, but it's the aftermath of it that seems to be kind of so big, you know.
Let's take it chronologically. So when did you know that you would be, well, let's go back a week. You'd finished second in the Irish Derby, not beaten very far on Tiger Moth for the Coolmore team, for Aidan O'Brien. And everybody thought, you know, that was a big chance for you that day, which obviously it was. It hadn't quite worked out. And, you know, much of the chat after the race was, you know, poor old Emmett. He must have thought he'd nearly won the Irish Derby just seven days before Epsom.
Yeah, that was it. It's kind of been a mad kind of 9 days, I suppose, with the Irish, then the English, and obviously the French Derby then on Sunday. So I didn't think for one second that I'd be riding in one of those races. Not
three derbies in 8 days.
Let alone three. I know it sounds ridiculous, but look, it was brilliant to take part in it. Obviously, the Irish Derby, there was a sense afterwards of, you know, nearly and what might have been, you know what I mean, if different things had happened or whatever. But I don't feel hard done by. As regards, we got a clear run through the race, got a nice position with the length of the straight to get by the winner, if we were good enough on the day. And I just don't think we were. I think we fell short. I think the winner was a particularly good horse. He got a fantastic ride off Shamey. He got a great passage through, and he just found a little bit more that last 150 yards when I thought I was running him down. So my initial reaction was kind of gutted that I didn't get there. But at the same time, once I had a little bit of time to reflect, I realised that there was 150 grand for second. Things weren't too bad, and we had no major excuses. If I thought we had, I'd obviously have it would have taken me a long time to get over not winning our own domestic classic, you know.
And that was Santiago who won that, beating you. So when Pete Pundit said, poor old Emmett, you were a bit more philosophical than that, were you? Working out your percentage of 150 grand.
That was it. I was thinking poor old Emmett in the immediate aftermath, in the few seconds afterwards. But I said, when I had time to reflect, I realised, you know, that having looked back at the replay properly, at the time I didn't think I was unlucky, really, to be honest. But having had time to look at the replay, I definitely don't think I was. And, you know, it was one of our own that beat us as well, which makes it a little bit easier to swallow. And obviously delighted for Seamus, who's been so fantastic for me throughout my career, even before I came to Aidens. I've always sat beside him kind of in the weigh room since I started as an apprentice himself, and Wayne Lorden and that kind of thing. So I knew them ever before I went to Ballydoyle. So they've been a big influence on me since I've been a kid at the very start, and now to work with them. They're brilliant guys to work with. So I was delighted for Shamey, to be honest, as well, as much as anything else. But he had three of them already. He didn't need another one. I did.
Serpentine himself won that day, won his maiden at the Curragh as well at that meeting. Mm-hmm. So when did you know that you were going to be riding him as sort of fourth, fifth shot for Coolmore and Aidan O'Brien in the Derby at Epsom?
I had an idea on Tuesday. Aidan rang me up and asked me if it was something that I might like to do, go to Epsom on Saturday and possibly on to France on Sunday.
Did he literally say something you might like to do, or is that you just summarising?
No, Aidan doesn't tell you. He asks you, in fairness to him now. So I wasn't pushed any which way or the other. He asked me if it was something I'd like to do. I, of course, nearly jumped down the phone when he offered. But look, again, it was a Tuesday evening. It was 2 days before declarations. Plans were still a little bit fluid at that point. Ground can change, you know, different things can change. We were still weren't even 100% sure with kind of restrictions as regards flying over and back. And it was a huge amount of things could have changed in the 2 days. But he was just putting a plan together, and he had asked me, would it have been something that I would have liked to have done if things worked out at declaration time Thursday morning? And I said, of course, that it was.
And also something you'd agreed to do, bearing in mind the COVID, bearing in mind quarantine, etc. And, you know, there are restrictions on travel. So presumably he wanted to just check that you were OK with all that.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. You know, it wasn't a huge call for me because, you know what I mean, I obviously just wanted to ride an Epsom Derby and a French Derby, you know what I mean? I didn't think I was going to be missing out on a huge amount here. Like, I mean, I might have had 10 rides in the 14 days. Shamey Heffernan was going to miss 10 winners in 14 days. It was a far bigger call for him to go across and put himself into self-isolation when he came back. So for me it was a no-brainer and an opportunity I was only delighted to accept on Thursday morning, then when final declarations came through.
And are you in self-isolation? What, we're a few days after the Derby, and you're back from Epsom and from France. So are you currently in self-imposed lockdown?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I'm on replay number 4029 or something, I think, of the Epsom Derby at this stage. So I've a bit of time to go over it and feel some of the calls and that from different people, which I'm obviously very grateful to get, and all the text messages that I haven't had time to reply to half of them yet. So it was just brilliant. And the outpouring of kind of goodwill for both myself and my family as well at home has just been fantastic. All my brothers and sisters and mum and dad said that they haven't left their phones for the last couple of days for trying to reply to people. So just to thank everyone and apologise to anyone who haven't had a chance to get back to yet, or may miss along, by the way. It'll be by accident rather than design, I know, that's for sure.
And you still win in replay number 4,500 and whatever. You're still winning it.
We'll keep going, yeah. Yeah, and we're still winning it, thank God. It hasn't changed the result.
And so travelling to Epsom, what were your thoughts? This horse had won just a few days earlier, won his maiden, but won it in really good style. I'm going to make a confession now. I actually backed him on the back of, just had a tiny little bet, because I thought there could be a funny result this year or an unexpected result. And the way he won at the Curragh was impressive. What were your thoughts going over there?
You know, it sounds silly saying you were quietly confident, but Aidan, and I've mentioned it in a few of the interviews over the last couple of days, had instilled me with a lot of confidence in the horse. He felt he was a horse that had come out of the Curragh well. He felt the test in Epsom over a mile and a half would suit him well. he was bred in the purple. He was by Galileo, obviously a Derby winner out of a filly that was second in the Oaks and remember when. So he had the pedigree to go and do the job. He had clocked a very decent time in the Curragh the week before, clocking a time 4 seconds quicker than the Group 3 over the same trip a few minutes later. So, and we felt he had beaten a nice yardstick that day, who was second in the maiden as well in Monument Valley. So, and it was the way he did it more so even than what he beat that day.
So in what way? What did he do that really struck you?
It was just the way that Wayne kicked him out and got him up into that gear, and you're thinking, God, this fella's rolling along. You know what I mean? You'd say he's striding, because it wouldn't be like Wayne to you know, go a real good one like that. You know what I mean? Barry, he thought he had the horse to do it, so he let him sling along, and much like myself the other day, filled him up at halfway before kicking on again. And it was just the way he ran through the line and ran out to the boards and having closed him down a little bit at the bottom of the straight, how he extended away again, that was so impressive, you know. And like I said, he's just a horse that was, you know, looked strong at the line on the day and looked like he could be open to further improvement, you know.
So were you daring to dream that you were going to win the Derby?
Yeah, but look, I've been lucky for Aidan that I've ridden in a couple of these nice races for him, you know, guineas and ledgers and things like that. And, you know, you wouldn't tell anyone, but I'd be lying if I said I hadn't gone to bed before all of those races thinking, Jesus, you know, what if I win the ledger tomorrow? What if I win the guineas tomorrow? What's going to happen here in that part of the race? What's going to happen in that part of the race? So you're visualising all those things before you ride those horses and hoping they come to fruition. Now, most of the time they don't, but I had visualized the way we might try and win that Derby the other day, and that was the way it turned out to be. So to see the kind of dream become a reality was fantastic.
And it's been very striking how you've mentioned a few times about Aidan instilling confidence in you. So I know we all know what instilling confidence means, but what did he actually say, you know, what was it that gave you that feeling of confidence?
I suppose it was one line. I mean, we spoke for a couple of minutes about him, but there was one line at one point of the conversation. He said, if you get things right, he said, this horse could actually win the Derby for you. And I knew he wouldn't just say it, you know, off the cuff. I knew he wouldn't say it if he didn't mean it. And I mean, I think I made the comment the other day that, like, I mean, if Aidan O'Brien told you the sky was green, you'd believe him. You know what I mean? He's right so much of the time, it's quite unbelievable. He seems to see things in horses that nobody else seems to see, and his opinion is just right. So, you know, he can be wrong like anyone else, but it's just so few and far between that he is, especially just when it comes to horses, he's always right is the answer nearly, you know.
And so you're at Epsom, you're instilled with confidence, you're getting the leg up on Serpentine, you're on your way to the mile and a half start, the most famous race course in the world, pretty much. Are you cool? I'm guessing you're pretty cool and calm. I can't see you. You're smiling when I say that, but I can't see you being a bag of nerves.
No, I don't. I don't think I am. Like, I mean, geez, without sounding cocky or anything, I was confident enough that hopefully if the horse was good enough that I would be good enough. So I wasn't worried about letting anyone down from that point of view. And even though it was my first Epsom Derby, I've ridden, you know, couple of hundred races probably over a mile and a half before, you know what I mean? And I'm riding a good number of years now. I've kind of plenty of experience at this stage. So even though it was a big race, it was you know, without putting it down, it was just another race, you know what I mean? So I wasn't nervous as such. I know all the guys that I'm riding with. I kind of know the tempo of those races, having ridden in kind of a couple of the nicer races for Aidan and that, and I'm riding those horses every day. I know them inside out. And, you know, I was confident enough that nothing should go wrong as such, really, as such, you know.
And there you are alongside Oisin Murphy, the champion jockey of the UK, who's a confident chap, and Frankie Dettore is there, and all these other guys. I know you've ridden in big races, but do you have to slightly pinch yourself? You know, I'm on my way to the start in the Derby on a horse that the trainer thinks has got a chance, and I'm beginning to think it's got really quite a chance. Wow, that must be a great feeling.
Yeah, no, it is. It's fantastic. And, you know, so every time you get a leg up on one of Aidan's, you get filled with confidence, or even when you watch see them walking around the ring, like, Jesus, no disrespect to anyone else's horses, you know, but Aidan has them always turned out so beautifully. They're all so well muscled up, they've great walks on them, you know, they're prepped to the minute. Like, it's hard not to be confident when you're riding those horses. Do you know that kind of way? If you're riding one that, you know, shouldn't really be there, you said this hasn't much chance, you know, and for argument's sake, you're told to make the running on it, and you say, this thing is going to be falling in a heap at the bottom of the straight, and I'm actually going to be getting in the way, you know, I'm going to get knocked down on as they're going by me, and, you know, you've all these different things, and you're thinking, I'd nearly rather be sitting at home, you know, that kind of way. But when you ride those horses and you ride for those people, you're confident going out, you know, and even if you're not confident in yourself, those horses bring that confidence and give you that confidence, you know. So I don't pretend to be as talented as Frankie or William Buick or Oisin Murphy or Shamey or any of those guys that I was riding against the weekend, but I wouldn't say that I felt beneath them or that I wasn't confident taking them on. I was happy enough to go out there and give it a go against them.
And so you jump out of the gates, you're off and running, and you obviously want to get to the front, don't you? And that was obviously the plan that you and Aidan had hatched.
Yeah, that was kind of it. The only thing I was a little bit concerned about was that he was a little bit tardily away in the Curra the last day, and even a little bit more so the time before. But it was just, he's a horse that's only had a few runs. It was just kind of a learning curve for him, you know. And I knew that once I got him out and got him up into that big rhythm that he has, that there wouldn't be any problem, you know, bar something took me on that wanted to go stupid. And if they did, I was happy enough to take a lead as well, you know. I was just going to continue to ride my own horse. But you're hoping you won't get hassled, or you're hoping things will go smooth in the race. But the only thing I was a little bit concerned about, as I said, was actually getting out and getting up into that position. So I had just said to Ben Curtis, I had a fair idea he was probably going to drop in. I knew he was drawn outside me. And I just said to him before I went in, if I'm a little bit slowly away, do you mind giving me a chance? And he said, no problem at all. He says, I'm happy enough to take a lead. And obviously we ride straight to the marker poles anyway, you know.
Yeah.
But just I gave him a little shout after we popped out. I got the clear run through for that first 100 yards and I was up and running then, and it was clear sailing from there, really.
Yeah, Ben Curtis on Highland Chief, clear sailing from there. And that, you know, what was the other phrase you used about the Curra race? He just sling along. He just went into a sort of sling-along mode. And that's what happened, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was kind of it, yeah. Yeah, big, big rhythm horse and, you know, doing, you know, it's even, they were talking about fractions and that kind of thing or whatever in the race, you know what I mean? I suppose the times are very interesting, but, you know, different horses are comfortable going at different paces, so you can't base everything on the clock. He was comfortable going the pace that he was going, and that's all I can kind of control, you know what I mean? I don't have a stopwatch as we're going along, so I'm not 100% sure of the times he's doing. But
so everyone thinks you've got a stopwatch in your head now.
No, I can assure everyone I don't have a stopwatch in my head. You're kind of going, you know, is the horse comfortable? Is he breathing right? Is he pricking his ears every now and then? Is he, you know, if he's his ears pinned back, he's probably doing a little bit too much. If he's, you know, if he's in prick forward all the time, he's probably not doing enough. So you're just looking for that nice kind of, I suppose, sweet spot or whatever in the middle where they're doing things nicely. And he did that for me, you know.
And what's he like sweeping around Tattenham Corner, still well in front? Did you know that you were well in front still?
Yeah, you did, because you can kind of, you know, as I said, the silence is kind of deafening when there's no crowd on the infield or anything like that. And I would be able to hear a horse if it was within a couple of lengths of me, and I couldn't hear that. So I was aware I was at least a couple clear, but I didn't realise I was kind of 10 or 12 and probably pulling further clear at that point was the answer.
And just before Tattenham Corner, the fractions, as you've mentioned already, show that he went, you know, that was a decisive moment, wasn't it? Those just sort of coming down Tattenham Hill, that's when he really asserted his authority.
In fairness to the horse, he was unbelievably brave. I mean, like anyone, if you're riding a bike, let's say, and you're facing it down a hill, you know, if you just let that bike fly down there and you're as brave as a lion, you'll wing down there and you'll get away from whoever's behind you and who's maybe slightly pulling on the brakes and been a little bit bottly about it. And I'm not saying I was brave, but the horse was brave. He attacked that downhill run as soon as I gave him a click at the top of the hill, whereas maybe other horses would have been a little bit more reluctant to face it with kind of the gusto that he did, and he was able to poach that little bit of a lead at that stage and maintain it all the way to the line then.
And were you aware obviously, well, we watching on TV, for those people on the racecourse following it could see the sort of the second, third, fourth, all these other horses desperate to try and throw down a challenge at you very late on. Presumably, you were sort of unaware of it, were you?
Yeah, I was unaware. I was
still
only,
silent.
Yeah, it was just silent. I was kind of just from the second I turned in at the bottom of the straight, I had one eye on the winning post and the other one on the furlong post on my left hand side as I was getting closer to it, and I was just trying to pace myself that I was going to get to the line and you know not be full of running obviously at the line. You know what I mean? You want to have used up 99% of your energy at the line, but you don't want to have it used up at the furlong post. So I was just kind of gauging it to get myself to the line strong and I wasn't really concentrating on what was going on behind me, you know.
I bet the question that everyone has asked you is, when did you know? When did you know that you were going to win? Donica O'Brien, Aidan's son, is meant to have said, with you know, practically at Tatnam Corner, they're not going to catch Emmett from here. What? When did you know?
Maybe that's why Donica rode so many more winners than me. He knows those things. I didn't know until I was gone by the line. But I don't think you ever know until you're gone by the line whether you're going to win or not, but you definitely know at different stages through the race whether you have a chance of winning or not. Like, I mean, if you're going nowhere four furlongs down, you know you're not going to win. But I knew I was still going somewhere four furlongs down, and you're just hoping you're still going to be getting that same feeling, two down and one down and at the line, and that's the way it transpired.
And were you wondering, where is everybody? That must be something else people have been asking you.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, you're probably thinking someone will come, but you're hoping that they won't, you know. So, look, they didn't, thank God.
And what does it feel like? So, you know, you've won the Derby. You've gone past that famous wooden finishing line and you've won it. What was going through your mind?
I suppose just a sense of satisfaction, elation. You know, you're thinking about, you know, what does it mean to everyone else who's watching on and that kind of thing and whatever. And I suppose, like, again, with any race, as soon as you go by the line, you're kind of thinking maybe even a little bit about of a debrief before you go in. You know, you're asking yourself the questions, you know, did he stay well? You're going to be asked these questions when you come in, you know, did he stay well? Did he just about stay? You know, did he handle the ground? Whatever. So you're kind of thinking a little bit about those things as well as soon as you pull up, you're running those things through your mind. How did the race go? So that you can kind of give some kind of an intelligent debrief when you come back in. Now, whether I succeeded in that or not, I don't honestly know. But I suppose those are the things, apart from the kind of obviously the feelings of elation and satisfaction, and maybe was tinged with disbelief as well, you know.
Oh, so it was tinged with a bit of disbelief.
Yeah, it was the answer. You know, you're kind of thinking there, Jesus Christ, there must be something gone wrong here. Have I another lap to go? Or is there, you know what I mean? You know, was there, like, you're going by the line thinking, am I after riding in the National that never was? Was there a red flag somewhere that I just wung by and ran by and everyone else had pulled up? Or, you know, there is a certain amount of disbelief. But as I said, 100 yards after the line, when Oisin come up behind me and gave a shout to say well done, and I kind of gave a bit of a shout out to me then, I realised it was after happening, you know.
Did you yelp? Did you smile?
Yeah, I gave it a little bit of a you. I think, or whatever, just something stupid in it came out of me. So it was, it was unbelievable. And then obviously pulling up, then a couple of the other guys congratulated me. So it was just, you know, to get the well done from your peers and the guys that you're riding against, and as you said, the Ryans and the Frankies and all those kind of guys that are riding in those races, for those guys to say well done to you, it's, you know, those are the things you want to hear, and they're the races you want to hear it in.
Were they saying it through gritted teeth? Was there a bit of how on earth did you do that?
We're all very good liars, us jockeys. We pretend we're delighted for everyone else, but deep down, I don't think we are.
And what about the moments from you've received your congratulations, you go back to the famous winner's enclosure at Epsom, you get the trophy, you have to deal with the media. Can you remember all of that, or is it a bit of a blur? Were you able to enjoy it?
Yeah, no, I did. Look, I enjoyed it, and it was brilliant. I suppose I'd never experienced anything like, kind of, you know, like usually after you weigh out, you might do one interview and you head into your weigh room and you get changed or whatever. But I was, you know, getting pulled off here, there and everywhere to do interviews for BBCs at the races. There was a press conference and I sat down at a table with must have been 20 dictaphones and 20 more iPhones on top of it as well. So I suppose something I'd never experienced, but delighted that I did get the chance to experience, and hopefully I came across okay in the few that I did afterwards and that kind of thing. So I didn't, hopefully didn't make a complete idiot of myself.
No, you didn't make an idiot of yourself in the least. But I think everybody's favourite line was, this is your first winner since October, Emmett. And your reply, I've been saving myself up. I think people love that.
Oh, God, it's probably not the truth. I was just struggling to get rides, really, to be honest with you. But I thought I better say I was saving myself so I could save some face.
Because that is one of the striking things. I noticed a tweet to you yesterday from a Northern jockey coach, ex-jockey and trainer Tim Reed, who said, you know, thank you, Emmett, you have given... You know, you don't have that many rides. You don't ride that many winners these days, but you've won the Derby. And he said, thank you for giving hope and a positive message to so many other guys similar to you. Because most people aren't Ryan Moore, Frankie Dettori, Eugene Murphy.
Yeah, no, look, it's a very nice tweet. I've said I've about 1,000 tweets. I mightn't have just seen that one, but thanks very much for it. Yeah, look, I suppose what it just proves is that, you know, obviously you have to be able to ride the horses or whatever, but 99% of it is down to the horses and a little bit of luck, you know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, and I think I said it in the press conference afterwards, there was 1,000 lads kind of more deserving and more talented than me inside in that weigh room, you know, but they just didn't get to sit on Serpentine in the Derby that day, you know what I mean? And that's just it. And I suppose anyone who's struggling for winners, it's just about getting on the horses, you know, and hopefully you have the luck to go with it, like I did on Saturday, that you can kind of capitalize on it, you know. So hopefully we might get a few more opportunities out of it and that kind of thing. And you know, hopefully I won't have to wait till next October or 3 or 4 months time for my next winner.
And it's quite striking that Aidan O'Brien used you in that there are plenty of trainers who, however close the people who are riding on the gallops are to the horses, they probably would be inclined towards someone else on the big occasions. And it's the second time, what, in 3 or 4 years, isn't it? Because Paddy Beggy was exactly the same thing when he won on Wings of Eagles.
Yeah, there's kind of, I suppose, there's the household names of Ryan and Shamey and Wayne, but there's kind of a team of us there, including myself and Mick Hussey and Paddy Beggy, and there's a couple of other guys in the yard, Stephen Cummins and Killian, that ride as well, that hold licences. And in fairness to Aidan, he's shown fantastic loyalty to his jockeys.
Well, it's the definition of loyalty, isn't it?
It is. Like, I mean, it's unbelievable. But it's not only Aidan, because, you know, he discusses this with his owners as well. So, you know, it's the loyalty shown by Mr. Magner, Tabor, Smith and all their families as well.
The lads,
yeah. So, look, again, I'll be eternally grateful to them. But, I mean, if Aidan O'Brien had chosen to use any one of the riders who had ridden, you know, probably 100 plus winners in England last year, there would have been no hard feelings on my part. I would have understood completely, but delighted to obviously get the opportunity that I did. Look, from Aidan's point of view, I suppose he feels that we know the horses extremely well. He knows that we know how he likes the horses ridden. You know, and he talked the other day about just kind of even just the tempo that those better horses can hold, and we're used to riding them work and that kind of thing, and that he didn't see it as a huge disadvantage, that maybe we weren't riding every single day, and again, no disrespect to anyone else, but maybe on lesser horses, you know, the fact that we weren't race riding every single day on lesser horses, that, and we have ridden in these few bigger races for him, that we kind of know the tempo of them, and that they're not a surprise to us, you know. So
I suppose you get your match practice on the gallops.
That's it. Like, I mean, I'm riding 10 or 12 bits of work every single day in Ballydoyle, you know, so I'm pushing out maybe, you know, half of them to the fullest extent, and maybe going to the line on the bridle and maybe 5 or 6 of the other ones. But I'm riding that much work, and I do plenty of running and all that kind of thing, and I keep myself fit, you know what I mean? So I'd like to think that when I am offered the opportunity, that I'm well up to it, you know. Again, without sounding, Jesus, cocky or overly confident or anything like that, I'd like to think I wouldn't let the horse down if they were good enough, you know. And again, just the loyalty that Aidan has shown has just been fantastic. And we're all in the same boat, Mick Parrig and myself, just, you know, when we get the chance, we're fit and ready to go, you know.
And you're one of the many McNamaras from County Limerick. I have a good friend who shares his name with your brother, called Conor McNamara, who's a commentator on BBC Radio on football, and he claims every McNamara with any talent in Limerick as a close relation. So I'm sure I sent him a text on Saturday afternoon. Are you related to Emmett? Of course, he said. So, but your dad is Eric, who trained a horse that I always used to like called Strangely Brown. And then your brother Connor is getting quite a lot of... He's a younger brother, is he, Connor?
My younger brother is Connor.
So and he's a jump jockey.
Yeah, Connor is as well. So dad was lucky with Strangely Brown. He won a grade one in France with him, the French Triumph Hurdle. I actually rode him on the flat and managed to get beat on him off about 65, I think, afterwards. Still don't know how to this day I managed it. He was rated about 150 or 60 or something like that over hurdles.
And your brother's riding quite a lot of weight. I remember him riding a horse called If You Catch Me Now to win at Punchestown earlier on in the year.
Yeah.
So it's obviously quite a family affair, you know, the racing, etc. Is everyone big into it?
Yeah, no, they are, in fairness. You know, as I said, my dad trains. My brother Connor has just started riding now, and he's actually a far better rider than me, so hopefully he'll have a decent, successful career ahead of him.
23 winners in the last jump season.
Yeah, he's flying. I'm probably biased, but I think he's a very good rider, and hopefully he could give something like the conditional title a shot this year. He's got the backing of Gavin Cromwell, who's been fantastic for him, and he's in William Mullins as a couple of days a week, or at least he will be again soon when kind of restrictions and that are fully lifted. He might even be back in there now at the moment, I'm not sure.
Are your sisters into it as well?
Yeah, Kate is going out with a jockey called Ryan Tracy, and they have a little boy together, so she's involved in the race, and she's involved with dad at home, working in the yard. My younger sister Erica doesn't have anything to do with horses. She works in childcare, but she knows what's going on. So we're tight.
Knew all about it on Saturday, I bet.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. No, we're close knit family, and it meant an awful lot to all of them at the weekend.
Well, it was that was the other striking thing from your media conference afterwards. You said, I hope my father isn't going to go and get a heart attack after this, because you'd obviously talked it through so much in the days leading up to it.
Yeah, look, I chat to dad most days anyway. We have a kind of a close relationship, but the calls became a little bit more frequent after the declarations were done in the 48 hours before the Derby. So he was just saying to me that, did you see this article about this horse? He might do this or he might do that. And I'd say, yeah, I saw that, Dad. And he'd say, yeah, I'm just letting you know. And did you see this and did you see that? And what do you think? We might do this or you might do that. So, look, obviously, I'd be getting all my instructions from Aidan, and I wouldn't be discussing them with anyone else, but I'd be chatting away to my dad, all right, about those things. So he was on the phone a bit.
I saw him with you on RTE television on, I think, Sunday night. You were on your way back from France. And he was almost literally glowing with pride. He was obviously so ecstatic.
Yeah, no, he was delighted. It meant a huge amount. I suppose if I was coming from a family who had no background in racing, I suppose they mightn't realise, you know, the prestige surrounding the race or the history surrounding the race or whatever you might want to say about it. But the fact that I come from a racing family, you know, who know what it means to win an Epsom Derby for the owners and trainers and the breed involved, I suppose just makes it even a little bit more special, you know. And I've lots of aunts and uncles and that kind of thing that are involved in racing and breeding and that type of thing. So I fielded phone calls from all of them over the last few days, and delighted to hear from them all as well.
I bet Conor McNamara, the football commentator, will probably be on to you claiming you as well.
But yeah, he mightn't have been claiming me 2 weeks ago now, but now
he will be now.
No, he is obviously.
No doubt about that at all. Oh well, you know, we could talk on for hours. What I am going to say is, you must have to be able to juggle riding 10 or 12 horses on the gallops every day, and to have qualified as an accountant, or have you qualified? You've got an accountancy degree as well.
Degree in finance and accounting. Yeah, so I got that done on the side there at some point. Yeah.
So you were doing that in the evenings?
Yeah, I was doing that in the evening. So I finished my degree in finance and accounting, and there's ACCA professional exams then to be done after that. So I've three out of those four done. So I've just one left to get out of the way. But again, there's no big master plan. I think some people think there is, for me to sit in an office someday soon, but I'll be definitely putting it on hold. It's just something that I was doing on the side, and when I wasn't busy racing in the evenings and finished riding out in the morning, it was just a nice distraction, kept me out of trouble.
So the office can go to one side while the Coolmore Ballydoyle gallops continue to be the priority.
They're the main focus. I have a job already, and I intend to keep it.
And you'll be able to work out your percentage of the prize money of the Derby. Anyway, I'm not going to embarrass you by asking you what it was.
I don't think I'll be able to plead ignorance anyway if revenue come looking for money that I say I don't have.
Well, look, it was a day that I'm sure you've appreciated the outpouring of pleasure on your behalf. It was a sort of slightly strange race because there was no one there. But Serpentine was in cracking form that day, and you and he have strode to a famous victory. So congratulations again from me. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us on the Cornelius Cast today. And thank you to you for listening. Please feel free to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. And we'll chat again soon. Thanks very much.